This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. It is now time for the MGO Blog Roundtable, which is brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, a Michigan man, Matt Demarest.
So what I learned in the break, don't offer Craig Ross any of those special brownies. Don't give him the special brownies.
No, they make me hungry. I don't like it.
Not they make him freak out.
Sorry, Brian.
No, it's
not.
I get
more Brian Cook looks than any.
No, I mean,
he has a very sort of distinctive.
That's probably
what
not true, Craig.
What the hell are you talking about?
That's probably not true.
So, Craig, did you go to Woodstock?
No.
You did not?
No. That sort of stuff was not.
He was already 50 when Woodstock
That's also true. Thank you. But I would go to like I went to every blues festival here. I went to the first blues festival in Ann Arbor, which is outside on Huron High School lawn, when they did the early blues festival.
I was just wondering because we heard from a lot of callers yesterday and tweeters who said that championship week back in 1989.
Yeah.
So yeah, Michigan win the championship. You had Hash Bash.
So you have to start the Final Four day was Hash Bash during the day. The Final Four at night. Monday night was the national championship game, and then later that week, I think it was Wednesday, Thursday, there were back-to-back nights that the Grateful Dead played at Chrysler.
And I just assumed that was Craig Ross Central, you know, in the middle of all that.
He doesn't really give up. He's a lawyer. He's like,
he's smooth. He's mellow. He seems like a flower child, too.
He does not.
He does not?
No, he has a software company. What are you doing?
I know, but that's what all the flower children did after they stopped being flower children.
Exactly.
No. They just kept going to get Cash Bash, and their pants got larger every year.
It's because they were hungry all the time.
Well, you go to Hash Bash, you're like, wow, those are some, I don't know even where you get pants that big. This is that's uncalled for. The
homemade,
size
Brian, they're
pants.
Homemade.
We're not in the air, are we?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All right.
Oh, they are?
Brian Cook across from me from MGO Blog. Brian, good morning.
Morning.
Ed Fang from Power Rank. Ed, good morning.
Good morning, Sam.
And then, of course, Craig Ross. Glad to see you as always. So, guys, the week that was in college basketball, let's rewind to, you could predict how Michigan was going to come out against Maryland, right? John Beilein said, I knew. Without question, my team was going to come out more dialed in defensively. They jumped on Maryland early, did a great job against Bruno Fernando in that first half. And really the story of the game was told in the first half as Maryland was never really able to dig out of that hole.
Yeah, and also Cowan was locked down. Mm-hmm. And when Michigan kind of let him get loose a little bit early in the second half, they did an interesting thing and they switched Matthews onto him. And not like Z isn't a great defender, but Matthews is a totally different problem for a 6 foot.
And I think John said that they kind of decided to do that. Like Charles said, I got him.
There you go.
I mean, I take care of this.
If there's anyone on the court who's going to be able to tell Xavier Simpson to get off Cowan, it's Charles. Like, if I'm Beilein, am I going to have the conversation? Probably not.
And the most impressive stat of the game. There was a game with. Xavier Simpson put up another impressive stat line, holding Bruno Fernando scoreless in the first half was an impressive stat. But he said after the game that Charles Matthews held his opponents, everyone he guarded, scoreless, but for the very last bucket.
Where he was trying not to foul.
Where he was trying not to foul. It's like, man, that's just elite stuff.
It is, and now that he's kind of refound the mid-range jumper, I think he was 3-7 from the mid-range in this game. Like, he's getting towards efficiency. He's at least kind of on that Mendoza line, and that really helps Michigan out. So now it's kind of like, well, can we get Poole going a little bit? Can we get
Can we start hitting some threes?
Yeah. I mean, the first game against Minnesota was Michigan was 3-22. And if they hit 27% of their threes, which is still terrible, they won that game by 11 points instead of having to have the last second Matthews jumper. So
right. I try and hopefully that will not be the case tonight. They will shoot better when they go to the barn.
You know, I keep asking myself this question, maybe some other people. Michigan is 23-3. That's pretty good. I don't think many people coming into the season said, oh, yeah, we'll be 23-3.
But, I didn't.
No one did. And yet you have to ask yourself, exactly how are we 23-3? We don't shoot the ball well from three at all. We're 32%.
We don't shoot well for a John Beilein team.
We don't shoot well, actually. I mean, we're a very pedestrian shooting team. We're a very average shooting team.
Well, and, no, we're above average three-point field goal make percentage for the season.
We're 32% in the Big Ten.
Yeah. And for the season, we're above Division I average.
You know, that's a lot of...
You know, and clearly, like, they hit 50% against Purdue and North Carolina, right? Which were big wins.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe people got a little bit overhyped about the team then. But, I mean, it's just they're not a bad shooting team. They're just bad for a John Beilein team, and they make up for it with elite defense. And we'll see how that is going forward. Like, clearly they're not shooting the ball well over the last couple games, except for a Rutgers team that had no idea how to close out a shooter. And you got to hope that they get it together and start hitting some shots. And we know from the analytics that there's a lot of randomness in making three-pointers.
Well, a lot of it, I think, you look at their best three-point shooter is in the funk of all funks right now, right, in Jordan Poole. And, you know, he has, while every look isn't great, and his shot selection isn't always the best, his shot selection is better, and he has gotten some good looks that just haven't fallen for him.
Yeah, and Iggy's the same way. If you get Iggy a catch and shoot three, he's a 40% shooter, and he's just kind of struggling. And then in the Maryland game, there's something wrong with John Teske. Like, everything was short. Everything was just kind of glancing off the front of the rim.
It was incredible. Legs, he set the world's record for scrapers in one game. I mean, I never saw so. And you know how hard it is to shoot a scraper? I mean, that it's hard as heck. And yet he must have had six of them. I mean, it was quite astounding. Yet at the end of the game, when Turgeon, who's a better coach than Ira thinks, when Turgeon came out,
you're gonna derail this whole thing.
I know.
When Turgeon came out, who was he talking about? Teske. I mean, he's saying Teske was the one who won this game for Michigan. That's what Turgeon says when
he comes.
Well,
he was clutch and hit that three.
He was clutch and hit that three, and their defense in the first half, his defense in the first half on Fernando was exceptional. And to their credit, they came out and established him after the break. He got some deep post position. Turgeon said he told Fernando, stop trying to make 25 moves and just try to go up and over the guy. He did that a few times. Finished with 12 points in the game. But, you know, again, he affected the game on the defensive end, even in a contest where he wasn't really good offensively. And then when it mattered, and this was something I said during the game, there was no hesitation on that final shot. I mean, he still had the confidence, the certainty to take it. And, you know, that I think you can attribute that to his teammates in part. You know, Xavier Simpson was pretty outspoken about telling John, keep shooting. And that's the other part that I took away from this game. I remember watching and seeing Isaiah Livers really seem like he was hunting this shot. It's like, man, John Beilein must have told Isaiah Livers, go out there and look for your offense.
Yes.
It was Xavier Simpson did that. It was Xavier Simpson told John Teske to keep shooting. Xavier Simpson told Isaiah Livers, go out there and hunt your offense, and those guys respond to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need Livers' shooting, right? I mean, especially if Poole and Russ Dykes are going to be off on their game. Like, Livers is a really good shooter. He's a really good Swiss Army knife guy. Does everything well, and you need that shot.
Yeah, and he's passed up some looks that I'm like, you got to take that.
Mm-hmm.
You're shooting 45% on the season. If you get any kind of decent three, you got to put that up.
Yeah.
Especially in the context of Michigan's offense, which isn't great. You know, it's fine.
But, yeah,
you know, they're trying to get to a point per possession so they can win by 10 points. But and they've done that a lot, but an open three from Livers of any variety is a good shot for Michigan.
What do you guys think of the minutes turned in by Dave DeJulius and Brandon Johns? What did you see?
Well, you know, Johns isn't a five.
I think we've got to come to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we know that long term, but for this year's team, he has to be.
Well, I mean, we're team Colin Castleton over here.
yeah, that's true.
But there's probably a reason he's not playing. but he's had those two great possessions against Iowa, so we're going to beat him.
Well, he had three possessions and one plausible one.
I'm not the president of the club. He is.
Well, you guys are Team Castleton over there, and Sam and I are Team DeJulius on this side of the table.
Well, I don't think anybody's disappointed to see DeJulius come through. He provides a different feel than Brooks, even if he's not doing a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Like, he's much more ball dangerous. Like, you can tell with his handle that he's got some jump to his game and his ability to get to the rim. I think he got fouled on that take to the
He did get fouled.
The one he made, right?
Yeah. Like, come on, man. See, as a freshman just not getting any difference.
But I think more importantly, like, he kind of looked like he knew what he was doing on the defensive end.
Yeah, Cowan didn't even get a shot up when he was on the court.
Yeah. So in five minutes on the court.
So, like, if he's able to do that on the defensive end, then you can allow him to, like, kind of grow into his game offensively. And he's going to start making some threes. Like, if you look at his high school highlight film, more than half of his threes are off the bounce. Like, he is an elite off-the-bounce three-point shooter, and it's going to come. It's going to get there. And once that happens, well, then you've got a guy you can play 20 minutes a game.
Yeah, and I could see even next year them playing him at the two some also. I think he's probably going to be a good enough defender. You can play X and DeJulius in the backcourt at the same time.
It'll be in matchups. Yeah,
so I could see that happen. I mean, answering my own question, Yaklich in the media day when I was talking to him said this, what gets measured gets done. And I began to think of the corollary, which is what isn't measured isn't sufficiently appreciated. And I think what isn't measured and isn't sufficiently appreciated by most fans, at least certainly average fans and me, is defense. And Michigan's got three elite defensive players, three we may not see again in guys like Teske and Matthews and X. And the homily is, I guess, defense travels. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you've got three elite guys. And that allows you to be in every single game. And it's why Michigan has been really in every single game this year. There hasn't been a single game that they were, you know, taken out of, even the game, the Penn State game, where they were down by a lot at halftime. That was that. But there's a variation principle, I think. And you guys all know about the Heisenberg uncertainty
principle.
Uncertainty principle. I mean, that's an Ed problem.
What's that?
It means that it's hard to measure, or measurements can't be made without affecting the systems that are being measured.
You can only measure two different quantities within a certain.
Yeah. And so there's a variation on that. The corollary on that is the Delaney certainty principle. And the Delaney certainty principle is that if there's some way for the Big Ten to screw Michigan, they'll do it. And so I suspect we're going to see some of that. It wasn't random that last week I predicted Bo Borowski would be doing the Michigan game, the Maryland-Michigan game.
Yeah, but that game, they allowed Michigan to defend vertically really well.
Absolutely. And we want Borowski, especially on the road. We're not going to get him on the road. We're going to get him at home.
So, like, that game could have gone in a lot different way if they weren't respecting John Teske's verticality, because he's going up straight. People are bumping into him.
Absolutely.
You know, Michigan runs out to a 13-point lead real quick because Maryland can't get a bucket. Mm-hmm. And that's because Michigan was allowed to contest. And that didn't happen at Iowa.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, you heard John Beeline talk about a physicality to the physicality to playing defense. It doesn't, you can be physical without fouling. And he was talking mainly about post position.
Right.
How you defend a guy when he's either backing you down or trying to establish a position to receive the ball on post entry. And he felt like, going back to the Penn State game, that Lamar Stevens just was able to get too deep too often. Felt like they did a better job against Bruno Fernando in the first half, not as much in the second half. Definitely going to have to be more on that first half Bruno Fernando game tonight. When you talk about a guy like Jordan Murphy, who is, what, coming off a Big Ten Player of the Week?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think with Lamar Stevens, like, he had a lot of tough shots, and he still only hit, like, 41% of it, you know, of his shots. So yeah, I don't feel like they necessarily
did a bad job. He cooled off in the first half, though. The dude was just...
I know, but he's, like, 9-20, so, like, okay.
Yeah, right? I mean, and it seemed like a bad matchup with... He was playing a 5 against Teske, and...
He got a couple buckets, but he also settled for some baseline jumpers that weren't that much. I mean, I think Isaiah Livers is going to be really important tonight because, you know, he got, what, 5 minutes in the first half against Fernando, and Fernando didn't even get a post up. Like, so Teske goes out, and Fernando's still in the game, and I'm like, oh, here we go. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I'm watching when Michigan's on defense because I'm expecting it to get dumped down on the post and for Livers to, like, get worked a little bit because, like, Bruno Fernandes a dude, you know?
Right, yeah. He's a specimen. Yes.
And he didn't even, like, get a post touch. So, like, if he can do that against Jordan Murphy, then that really takes a lot.
Ira wants to say Turgeon.
You're going to have
to... Craig and I are going to talk after the show.
Ira, you're going to have to admit that the number 351 most experienced team in the country is doing pretty well this year.
What have I said about him this year, Sam? In the last week?
Is his best coaching job.
I've said that all week. I've been saying this is the best job, as young as they are, it's the best coaching job he's done. I still need him to prove his worth in March, which he has never done, but he has done his best regular season job this year.
Okay. They still have a legitimate chance to win the regular season Big Ten.
No, they're two games back now.
If they beat Michigan, they go 15-5.
But they will be 0-1 against Michigan State. They're gonna have a really tough time with tiebreakers.
Okay.
Well, I mean, but they could get a banner if they get a share. But they're two games back of three different teams. It's probably gone.
All right, we have to get to a break. Come back on the other side. So how has the Big Ten race been, if at all, how has it been altered by the injury to Nick Ward? We'll get into that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. We are back now with the MGO Blog Roundtable. And so I think we got to pick this discussion up real quick.
Thanks for getting me, Sam.
We were going over, you look at these two teams, Michigan and Michigan State. This is actually a story. Somewhere.
It was a Q&A with Graham Couch. Someone asked him, take the two teams, Michigan and Michigan State, and create a starting five.
And the most ridiculous one to me was he would take Matt McQuaid over Charles Matthews.
Yeah.
And, completely agree.
And Fang agrees.
Completely agree.
Lost his mind.
I think
McQuaid
so, too.
McQuaid shoots 44% from three.
I don't care.
Charles Matthews can't shoot the basketball.
Charles Matthews is an elite defender, but
McQuaid is... A defender
totally
on a team.
Dependent on his shots being created for
That's
him.
Fine.
Totally dependent.
But on the rest of that lineup, you're going to have plenty of people that are going to create shots and can get to the bucket.
And his defense, while, you know, good for them, is not on par with Charles. Charles is a better stopper.
McQuaid is a very good defensive player. I'll take
his overall athleticism, his defensive ability, and his ability to get his own shot, more so at least than Matt McQuaid, I'll take that or Matt McQuaid any day.
Matt McQuaid shoots -6% inside the line. Like, it's not even a question. This is the craziest
but he doesn't
take
need
Ed's ever
to
had.
Shoot. He doesn't
and,
need
and
to
and
shoot.
If we remember the takes that Ed's had, this is the most insane one.
No.
I agree. You know, I'll give you Cassius.
Wait, Cassius over Xavier?
No, I didn't say that.
You did.
No, I said you take Xavier Simpson, but you know, could you put Xavier Simpson and Cassius Winston in the backcourt together if you're taking five? I could see that argument. You know, bias.
Oh,
included.
We're not going possession by
bias,
position.
Bias included would err on the side of JP. But JP is a major shooting slump right now. Cassius Winston is an elite shooter, so I could see you taking him, especially if you have an X. A Charles Matthews and a Teske to cover up for his defensive deficiencies. I could see him sliding in the top five there.
I mean, so the reason Michigan State is where they're at is that they are the best two-point field goal defensive team in the country. Doesn't matter if you look at raw numbers, adjusted numbers. McQuaid's a part of that. He's a good defender. He's more than a good defender. He's not Charles Matthews.
That's my point.
Then the other side of the ball, you have a guy that can shoot the ball from three.
And that's all he can do.
That's all you need on this team.
And he's not going to get any looks against Michigan.
You don't need him to create his own shot.
Well, no, you need a guy who can actually attack a closeout, which he cannot do. He can attack a closeout, get downhill, and then throw up a brick that goes over the backboard. That's his deal.
I'll take my 44% from three.
Yeah, we're gonna learn.
He's gonna
hit
the shot clock from two.
We're gonna learn a lot about Matt McQuaid in these next.
Also, he looks like a McPoyle. Don't ever forget this. He's a McPoyle.
What's a McPoyle?
I mean, you can judge the man by his looks. I'm not judging him.
I'm just saying that this drove me crazy for years, and then it was resolved to me. He's a McPoyle. From It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you got to get hip to the logic.
Okay.
Is that what they say to the kids? You would know.
So how did anyone see how Nick Ward got hurt?
Let me tell you, I watched that game. All I can say is he looked perfectly 100% fine going into the locker room.
And he comes out
at halftime with a wrap or a semi-cast on his hand. So I have no idea. I guess it's possible something happened, but he was in a lot of pain and sitting there on the bench when
so you don't buy something happened toward the end of the first half.
I'd be very skeptical unless someone showed me a good video, but I didn't see anything.
So how does that impact the race? How does that impact Michigan State's?
Well, I mean, it doesn't really help Michigan State. Xavier Tillman is a great player. I think he's probably in certain circumstances as good as Ward, but not on this current Michigan State team, because he's a 20% usage guy. He's not a 29% usage guy. And one of the things that Michigan State does really well is they run, and they run to post. And the ability to do that is because they have two centers. And, you know, Ward's playing like 20 minutes a game because he's got to run every time he's out there. So if you're playing Tillman and you're playing him 30 minutes a game, is he able to maintain that pace? And he's in pretty decent shape, but he is a big guy. So I kind of feel the answer to that is no.
Last night, the answer to that was pretty much yes. I mean, it was Rutgers, but Rutgers was ahead, I think, by 11 points in the second half. And Tillman was a major, major part of their comeback and seemed pretty able to keep up the pace and run the floor the way Izzo wants him to run.
Yeah, so. I expected that. Michigan State finally tied the score, I think, at about 12:30, and then they pulled away from there. 12:30 in the second half.
Yeah, they got four straight offensive rebounds, and then I think McQuaid hit a three to tie it at 40-40.
There you go, Ed.
That's right. So
you can shoot threes off offensive rebounds.
I love how you made Matt McQuaid my boy now. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah.
You made Matt McQuaid your boy.
I had an opinion. So Michigan State, I mean, they're 31st in the nation. Dude, Brian, I don't even want to talk about
you. I didn't say it.
That was
Brian. No, he said it. Craig said it.
Sorry, Brian. I'll take that back. So Michigan State, their defense, two-point field goal defense, they're 31st in the nation. When I adjust for schedule, they're all the way up to six. Sorry, offense. Two-point field goal offense. When I adjust for a schedule, they're sixth in the nation. So a lot of what they can do is based on, you know, within the arc. And Nick Ward's a big part of that. High usage rate. He's getting towards the bucket. So there's got to be a drop-off there if he can't go.
Well, the other thing that's important for Michigan is that Nick Ward is like fourth in the country at drawing fouls. And Michigan has one center and one center only. And Tillman is decent, but he's not anywhere near that caliber of foul magnet. So that'll help Teske stay on the floor. And hopefully, I have a hard time seeing Xavier Tillman do a ton against Teske. Like, he'll get a bucket or two. He's got some up and under kind of stuff near the basket. But, like, you know, Teske's going to make it hard on him.
He's not a better player than Bruno Fernando.
Oh, no. I mean, I think he's a good.
He's good.
Yeah.
He's very good. But, you know, I don't think he's a. He's a tougher check than Fernando, so I think Teske should be able to do fine there.
Yeah, and they're going to make Winston create all of Michigan State shots, every single one.
Yeah, I mean, the key for them is keeping them in the half court. I mean,
it's going to be hard.
You got to keep them in half
court. Cassius Winston creating shots against Xavier Simpson.
Oh, I gotcha.
Right? Yeah, like, I think that, so that's not...
Well, and he's going to get a heavy dose of Charles, too.
Like, yeah.
We'll see. I think there might be a little... It might be a little back and forth on this one.
Yeah, no.
I think X might be like, hold up, man. I'll let you switch off on Cowan, but this one is personal. This one, I got to have this one.
I know, but like, it's kind of a waste, like, putting Matthews on anyone else.
Well, he has to check Matt McQuaid. He does, right? I mean, Matt McQuaid is just going to go all...
So someone needs to, like, be up there and prevent him from launching. That's true.
Yeah, he's a good three-shooter. There's no question about it.
Matt McQuaid's going to go Ray Allen on him. Got to be ready. Yeah.
I'm not saying anything. It's these two. I didn't say
anything.
You did. I've moved on.
You tricked me, Craig, man. I'm mad about you tricking me.
So, I mean, that injury definitely impacts. That doesn't mean that Michigan State has no chance. They're just less of a chance. But Purdue, I mean, they get two games the other night, both end on tips. Bruno Fernando in the Maryland-Iowa game, and then Matt Harms. Was that over the back? You think that was over
the
back?
No.
Wasn't over the back?
No, I mean, when I first saw it, but on replay, it's just like he's taller than the guy. That was a really great play at the end of that game. Because you slip the screen, and Cowan's just like, all right, I'm going to get to the bucket. And it doesn't matter if he misses, because he draws help, and it's a Kobe assist, and you have Bruno Fernando sitting at the rim unchecked. Like, that was, I liked that. That was good stuff.
Good strategy by Turgeon, huh?
Yeah. I'm just trolling Iron.
How about that?
Well, I figured.
Or it could have been just Cowan doing his thing and Fernando being right there, and less about the coaching and more about the Jimmies and the Joes.
I don't know. I thought that was a good play for an end game, because you're either going to get a bucket or you're going to draw help.
So, I mean, Purdue.
Anyway.
And you guys have been saying all along, Purdue, the schedule is just very favorable for them down the stretch. And was this their toughest one? Indiana?
There's a lot of teams that could trip up a team. And, man, that was a really bad game, but I was riveted because people were so furious the whole time. It was amazing.
I guess I don't have a great appreciation for Indiana, Purdue, but down there, it's like Michigan State, right?
It may be even more so. I mean, a couple years ago, I was at the Purdue-Indiana football game, and Michigan at Purdue. Michigan was pretty much beating up on Purdue at the time, and everyone was trolling in the stands Indiana. So they would do their cheers, and the end of the cheer would be, Indiana sucks. And I thought, wait a minute, Indiana ain't even here. You're playing Michigan, and you're yelling about Indiana?
That happens a lot of places. Yeah. At Ohio State, I was there for a Maryland game a bunch of years ago, and the crowd was quiet. They put a Block M on the screen. They found a Brady Hoke lookalike in the crowd, and those were the two things that got the crowds going.
Yeah. So.
But, when Michigan went to Assembly Hall, that was one of the angriest arenas I've ever heard. Like, because they're out to a 17-0 lead or whatever, and the whole arena is just boo. Anything happens, they're boo. So they're in a situation where they're 12-2 to start the season. They think, yeah, this is awesome, and now they're not even going to the tournament. And then their rival comes in and Harms does something in the first half. I don't remember exactly what it was, but like something that looks debatably dirty. And so they're on him the whole game, and it's just boo. That is the angriest place in America right now.
Well, I mean, with the squad they've had the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, Archie Miller, you think he's coaching for his job next year?
Well, yeah. No. I mean, you're in the sense that you're always kind of coaching for your job after you had a terrible season like this one.
I mean, if he brings in the class that it looks like he's going to bring in, like, they'll give him some slack.
Plus, they have Jerome, and they got Jerome Hunter coming back. I suspect Langford's gone.
Yeah.
And what's his?
Jawan Morgan.
Morgan's gone.
Yeah, he's gone.
And the rest of the team is
young. They're going to be really young.
They'll be Maryland next year, and they'll be like that kind of.
They'll be Maryland, but with a worse coach.
I think that's a lot.
That's debatable, but that'd be a really interesting argument to have. I'm just surprised Bright hasn't jumped in yet to say that losing Jawan Morgan doesn't matter because he's 4'11".
I mean,
Jawan Morgan can play.
He's a real good player.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far.
Although he hurt him down the stretch with his dribble drive attempt that he fumbled out of bounds. Yeah. What are you doing, dude? Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Obviously, was rooting for Indiana in that game. But look, we got one more segment. We can get national with this one because, the implications, when you talk about the major injury, at least in that game, don't know how long it'll keep Zion Williamson out, but what is Duke? What happens to Duke? What happens to the ACC race if Zion Williamson doesn't come back in the regular season? They say mild knee sprain, but when you have on the line what he has on the line, you err on the side of caution. That's the big talking point this morning. Is what if Zion Williamson's people come back and say, hey, Look, we're putting it on the shelf at least for the remainder of the regular season to make sure.
I would advise him. I would advise him to do that.
Yeah, I would advise him to start prepping for the NBA draft right now.
Sit out.
Cam Reddish too. How heartbroken must he be to see this happen to his teammate? He can't risk going on the floor anymore. He's got to go to the draft.
They both need to sit out.
When you get to the tournament.
The tournament doesn't matter to Duke people. So just.
The ACC tournament doesn't matter?
No. They don't really care. They're going to be like lawyers and bankers and whatever. It's not really important to them. Just go to the draft immediately.
I don't know what that shot at lawyers meant.
Well, I'm just like, I'm just saying that, people who are well off don't get as, they're not, in general, as passionate of sports fans because they have other things in their lives. That's why.
Unlike me. Well, no, it's true.
This has been a really mean hour.
We got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side. We'll pick up the discussion. Duke minus Zion Williamson and got destroyed in the paint last night. Destroyed in the paint last night. Made their defense. Can one guy really be? Really mean that much defensively? We'll get into that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket.
Is that right?
So Duke,
short-term memory.
They said that the tickets were going at Super Bowl prices for this game. Barack Obama was in the stands. I think Spike Lee was there.
Yeah, Spike Lee. Get-in price at secondary market was like $2,000, something like that.
Yeah, so it was a packed house, which isn't hard to do. At Cameron.
And then they got to see that kind of defense.
And they got to see about 30 seconds of Zion Williamson, which clearly was the biggest draw in the game. And he literally came out of his shoe.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, you talk about a wardrobe malfunction. This was a manufacturer's defect. Ira mentioned Nike's stock is down 1%. They'll pick that back up. I think it's going to be more the embarrassment than anything. And they might not sell any Paul George shoes anymore, but they'll still sell a bunch of Nikes and everything will be fine. But what was glaring to me, the total lack of defense. I mean, the total annihilation of any semblance of defense that Duke threw up last night.
Luke May went for 30.
See, but I'll concede that.
No, but what are you doing against Michigan? what are you doing against Iggy Brasdakis?
Nothing, basically.
I think Iggy is a plus defender. Yeah. But I'll give you some of the transition buckets because of style of play with North Carolina. I'll give you Luke May, who's a decent player, at worst a decent player. Really good college player.
He's a
good college player. But their perimeter guys, they can't guard the ball, man.
They
couldn't guard the ball. They got, they got back cut to death as well. I mean, just their guys, their guards and wings could not keep Carolina from the. And so the stats in the first half, and this was, I couldn't believe it. 1 for 16 from the perimeter, North Carolina was. 17 for 24 from the paint. 17 for 24 from the paint. They finished with 62 points in the paint.
Yeah, 2 for 20 from three for the game, and they beat. What was the top team in the nation by 16 on their home court?
So the question to you guys is Zion Williamson really, he's that much defensively?
Well, there's a guy named Jordan Sperber who was a former assistant at New Mexico State. I think he was he's an analyst.
He did some interesting work even before that, which I think got him that job on matchups.
But he's got a great Twitter presence, and he was pointing out that in a previous game, I think against Syracuse, that Duke makes an absolute epic ton of mistakes on defense, and Williamson and the rest of those guys with their NBA athleticism bail them out. So there was that three-pointer that Zion Williamson blocked, right, where it's just like, this person is not a human being.
Right.
And if you take that guy out of the middle who erases the many, many mistakes you make, then the crazy thing about that game is both teams were giving up more wide-open threes in 5 minutes than you'll see in an entire Big Ten game. It's just like kick it around the side. You don't even have to go inside. You just kick it to the corner, and there's a guy who's wide open for three. It looked like a February NBA game where, you get a guy who's open in the corner and nobody tries to close him out. It's just like, all right, well, they'll make it or miss it.
Yeah, and combined, those two teams were 10 of 59 from three.
I know, but the looks they were getting were crazy. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, Zion definitely matters. But true. I mean, Duke is not going to be that bad on defense. You got to remember, they got two wings that are going to be top five picks in the NBA draft still on that team. I forget their names now, but you guys, McReddish and Barrett. I mean, those are good players.
Yeah, 60 of the 72 points for Duke last night.
Yeah. So, I mean, it should, and coming into this game, they were top five in defensive efficiency. So that's kind of my point.
I mean, I understand that's a huge scoring cog, but I was just amazed at the total lack of defense.
They looked totally unprepared to deal with Carolina's tempo, and it's like, you play this team every year.
Yep. Like, well, but they get new players every year, man. These are freshmen.
I don't know.
You know, they haven't been in the moment.
I wonder if Coach K is actually any good at coaching anymore. Because, like, he gets these guys, and then, so how are we supposed to know if he's any good at actually putting
well,
a team
I mean,
together?
Was he ever good at the X's and O's part of coaching, or was he always just a people person that was able to...
A people person.
He's
that
a people
rat
person.
Face.
I agree with Ed on this one. He's more of a people person.
A people person.
He's the most foul-mouthed referee baiter in the history of basketball. And but it worked for him for many years. And
What has been the appeal to Mike Krzyzewski though?
You win. Right?
Nike gives people money to play at Duke.
But he had to get there first though.
Right.
They didn't always give people money to pay.
No. You get Christian Laettner.
I mean,
and you make some Final Fours, you win a title.
But he was getting guys before.
He was at Final Four before
won,
Laettner.
That's when he won the title. But he was with Alaa Abdel-Nabi.
Well, even go before that, Mark Allery and Johnny Dawkins.
Yeah, Tommy Amaker.
Yeah. Yeah, Johnny Dawkins was probably his first big recruit, if I remember.
He had some guys. Yeah, whatever guys. Made you want to go play for Mike Krzyzewski?
I don't know. He had an aura of leadership.
He's a knight disciple.
He's a people
Big
person. Ed was right in the first place. But, I don't know. I mean, it's the juxtaposition between Duke and North Carolina and then Indiana and Purdue in the two conferences is really pretty stunning. I mean, those are two, like, big rivalry games, the fan bases who don't like each other and teams that don't really like each other. And one game was a complete rock fight with all defense, and the other was no defense at all. It's very, very
so. Bad. So let's say Duke loses the ACC.
Okay,
seems likely now, right?
And doesn't, and then they don't win the ACC tournament.
Yeah. Okay.
Also seems plausible.
So that means they aren't. Are they still in one seat?
No.
Probably not.
And so if Michigan wins out, is Michigan a one seed?
Yes.
Well, I mean, if Michigan wins out, they're clearly a one seed. I think that they're being severely undervalued right now. Like, Gonzaga has no resume. They have one win over Duke, and then they have nothing.
But they for some reason, I guess all those years of maybe, you know, giving them a slight.
Can you guys answer the net
pendulum
part of it?
Is totally swung, and now you overvalue Gonzaga. I agree with you.
But the computer side of it, Brian and Ed in particular, how are they like in the top three in the net? I know they had the one win, and they lost to Tennessee, but...
I mean, if you're just going by KenPom, yeah, they're a one seed. They're blowing everybody out. They're a really good team. But I kind of thought that the net was more of a sorting tool so that when you look at the pages, it's like, okay, how good are these teams? So Michigan is going to have a crazy number of quad one team wins. And Gonzaga is like done for the year. I think they might have one like at St. Mary's. That's a quad one win. And they cannot have the resume of the Big Ten champion.
Yeah, Duke is what does it.
In terms of Duke,
right. I mean, so if you look at Michigan's strength of schedule, it's like 41. They're 90. Like, there's no justification for Gonzaga being a one.
So do you think the injury situation with Killian Tilly is something that the committee will take into account?
Well, he's gone for the year, isn't he?
They said there was a chance. I thought they said there was a chance he could be back in the postseason.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think they should have to take it into account.
I don't think they should be looking at that. I don't think they should be looking at Michigan State's injuries. I think you evaluate a team on how they do over the year and forget about the injuries going into the tournament. This is how Michigan got ripped by the Big Ten way back with Bo. Oh, Dennis Franklin's hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that was not right. And so...
Well, the committee has shown that they do kind of...
I mean,
it's not like what's right. It's like what they do.
I mean, there was that famous year that Cincinnati with Kenyon Martin got bumped down to the two seed.
Yeah, when Michigan State have that national title, the Kenyon Martin doesn't break his leg or ankle. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that was huge that year.
Yeah, it's huge, but it shouldn't impact how the committee ranks teams. It should be based upon their year's work, regardless of who can play, who can't play.
But like, if you're telling me that the Big Ten champion in this Big Ten, the best conference in the country, can't get a one seed, I'm like, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
we have 20 conference games. Like, everybody in this conference went out and beat people in the non-conference. It's the best conference in the country. There's no bad teams. Like, Michigan's going to lose at
Penn State. There's no bad teams, but...
There's no bad teams.
There isn't a bad team. No. Even Rutgers is not a bad team. Yeah. They're not a bad team.
They're okay, well, you go have your Matt McQuaid party over there.
Disagree. You guys saw Rutgers play defense?
I did.
You guys
saw
Rutgers play defense at home?
That Matt McQuaid reference is stuck with you now.
It's my boy now, I guess.
Yeah, we got to get your McQuaid jersey. Get Izzo on the line. He'll hook you up.
Sure. I mean, look, the Big Ten's been great. It's getting Tim Miles fired this year. Like, no doubt it's a fantastic basketball conference. And that's just the way things break, right? Because you lose a lot of games.
Was it you that said, Ira? No, it was Steve Clark. So Tim Miles said, yeah, but even if they fire me, I'll get paid next year. It's like,
that was bad.
You're done. You're over when you say that, right? Yeah.
So the year that Indiana was good and Michigan would have won the Big Ten title, there was a bunch of teams that were really good in the Big Ten that year. Was that 13?
It was 14.
Was that 14? I think Indiana got a one seed that year, but I think it's just the way that it breaks with wins and losses and with the committee. And
the thing is, Carolina's on the two line, and usually if people are doing like S-curves, they're ahead of Michigan. They're 20-5. They got their heads beaten in by Michigan. And Michigan's 23-3 in the toughest conference in the country. I don't know how you can possibly justify that. It's I don't understand Michigan being like the last two seed right now. It's insane.
It's the Delaney certainty principle.
I mean, well, Delaney doesn't have that much influence.
Well, I'm talking generically. Mm-hmm.
So it's just strange to me. But they've got an opportunity to go to Maryland. They got an opportunity to go to Michigan State. Those games will, if they are wins, shoot Michigan back up, I think.
All right. Well, we shall see. What do you think happens in tonight's game?
Got to hit some threes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to be another kind of rock fight unless Michigan just kind of eases out to an early lead and goes from there. But I don't see how Minnesota's going to score a significant number of points against Michigan.
Well, they don't shoot the three at all. I mean, except for Kalscher, and so you shut Kalscher down, and you have a good chance because I don't think they can beat up on Michigan inside. But it depends how is the game officiated. I mean, if Teske's in early foul trouble, if Iggy's in early foul trouble, well,
that's a different game. I mean, I hope they double on the post because
they can double in this game
because only Kalscher is really a threat. Mm-hmm. So if you've got Kalscher, you can't double, but somebody else. Right. Can, and then it'll take some foul pressure off Teske. So I would do that early and see how the game develops.
My numbers are Michigan by 4. That's less than they were a favorite at Penn State. So if they play their game, they should win. And let's hope they do that.
What about Sunday versus the Spartans?
I mean, Michigan's at home. They won't have Ward. I just don't see how, unless Winston is just making a lot of really tough contested shots, I don't see how they keep pace.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Michigan wins on Sunday. I think tonight is at least equally as problematic or difficult as Sunday.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think Michigan wins the home game against Michigan State.
All right. We shall see if it works out that way.